From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA, and this is the sound of a conga drum. At least that's the sound it makes when I try to play it. The sound is much better for my 12-year-old son, Raul, who takes lessons. But there is no comparison to this. On today's program, we turn to the Latino USA archives to revisit interviews with three undeniable masters of Latin percussion. The late greats, Patato Valdés, Mongo Santa Maria, and Ray Barreto. Virtuosos all. Coming up on Latino USA, stay with us. Some members of the Arizona legislature are seeking to ban Raza Studies programs, calling them tax-funded hate speech. Joining us to discuss this and other news of the week affecting the Latino community is Univision's national news anchor, María Elena Salinas. Hola, María Elena.
Hello, María. Nice to talk to you.
As well. But you know what? I was really alarmed by the tenor of this legislation in Arizona that has been recently approved in committee. The legislation wants to ban courses that, quote, denigrate American values and the teachings of Western civilization, and it would bar teaching practices that overtly discourages dissent from those values. María Elena, some people would say this sounds like fascism. What's going on here?
María, we really shouldn't be surprised, especially if it's coming out of the Arizona legislature. After all, you know, they have approved some of the most drastic anti-immigrant measures that we reported about here. But, you know, it is hard to believe that they could go this far and think that they can get away with it. Basically, what the Appropriations Committee of the Arizona House of Representatives approved were provisions to a larger homeland security measure. And like you said, it attempts to block funding to schools whose courses denigrate American values. The question is, who is going to determine what courses denigrate American values? And who's going to determine in the first place what American values are? American values are also immigrants' values. This is a country of immigrants, after all. So another thing that they want to ban is organizations that operate in campuses that are based in whole or in part on race. So what's going to be the criteria? Is that going to include Asian groups? Is that going to include African-American groups? So I guess if it does get approved by the full House, you know, I would bet a lot of money that it's going to be challenged in the courts.
And we'll be doing more on this story next week, María Elena. Let's talk about the Arizona border now. The Department of Homeland Security, of course, has been talking a lot about the use of technology as a means of controlling the border. Over the last few months, they'd been working on a so-called virtual border fence, but that project has now been scrapped. So what happened here?
Well, the technology failed and it was ineffective. You know, that's basically what happened, and they had already been warned, the Government Accountability Office had already warned Congress that this virtual wall was not up to par, but Michael Chertoff, Secretary of Homeland Security, he approved it anyway. But now they're finally realizing that this virtual wall does not solve the intended purpose of using this technology to stop illegal immigration. You know, one of the problems that it has is that there's too much time from the moment that movement is detected on the border, and the Border Patrol agents get the message. So, you know, they claim that it has been effective, that since December about 3,000 people were arrested thanks to that virtual wall, but it's really not much when you consider that hundreds of people get through the border every day. So that's $20 million of taxpayers' money down the drain. So I guess the question is, when are they going to realize and figure out that the physical wall doesn't work either? There's a lot of money there. Just like Governor Bill Richardson said once, you build a 16-foot wall and immigrants will build a 18-foot ladder.
Well, of course, we'll be watching that, María Elena. Let's move on to a story coming out of Havana where the wives of political prisoners, and the Cuban government has always denied that they have political prisoners, but the wives of these political prisoners, the so-called ladies in white, have been protesting. Some of them have even been arrested, and Cuban authorities are saying that the United States is behind this whole movement of the wives of these political prisoners protesting. So what's the story here? Do they have any proof of that?
Well, they say that all the time. These ladies in white, they often hold these silent protests or sit-ins. Sit-in is exactly what they were doing this last time that they were detained. They decided to sit on a street that was in the area very close to where the new head of government, Raul Castro, was. They were let go, But the controversy here is something else, that Cuban television aired a portion of a telephone conversation that was recorded that these women were having with Florida Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Layton. And the conversation was apparently intercepted by the Cuban government or by the Cuban telephone company. And in that conversation, Ross-Layton was expressing her support. Again, it's not unusual for U.S. politicians or activists to communicate with dissidents and show their support. But what is different is that the Cuban government hangs on to these types of complaints to try to prove that there is U.S. intervention. So by airing these conversations with the Florida congresswoman on Cuban television, the government is trying to show proof to the Cuban people that there, in fact, is U.S. intervention behind these protests.
Okay, Maria Elena, well, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, Maria. Nice to talk to you.
Maria Elena Salinas is a syndicated columnist and national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish-language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. In the 1940s, Cuban congueros like the legendary Chano Pozo came to New York, and through collaborations with jazz greats like Dizzy Gillespie, rhythms like the Cuban rumba, the son, and the cha-cha became a part of the American musical lexicon. Today on our program, we pay tribute to three legendary conga players, each who in their own way helped shape musical styles ranging from son to jazz, and even rock. We begin with Mongo Santa Maria, who passed away in 2003. He joined me for an interview in 1999 to discuss his roots and his legacy. He's known as the maestro of Afro-Cuban music, the most influential Cuban percussionist of his time, and one of the greatest conga players ever. He is Ramon Mongo Santa Maria, born in 1922 in the neighborhood of Jesus Maria in Havana, Cuba. For six decades, Mongo Santa Maria has been leading the way and innovating orchestrations. We're very honored to have with us the great conguero, Mongo Santa Maria. He joins us from his home in Miami. Un honor y bienvenido a Latino USA. From your perspective, Mr. Santa Maria, a person who has had the experience of working with such great musicians from Dizzy Gillespie and Cal Jader to Latino musicians like Damaso Perez Prado and Tito Puente, can you tell us how you see yourself and what you've accomplished in your life?
Bueno, una experiencia muy bonita.
Well, it's been a beautiful experience. I feel satisfied to have been able to participate with these musicians, to have been able to experience life to its fullest with them and to do music, which is what I love most in life.
Take us back to your childhood and when everything started for you.
Desde que empecé mi vida.
In Cuba, when I was a young boy, I used to play with the boys from the neighborhood. It was my life since I was young. Music was always part of me. Every place there was a rumba being played, anywhere there was music and people having a good time, there I was. I was always one of the first to organize a musical happening. Rhythm always attracted me, and my life has always been marked by the rhythmic instruments.
Y siempre mi vida fue tocar a plenitud todos los instrumentos rítmicos.
So, which is your favorite rhythm?
Bueno, el son.
The son is the principal rhythm of Cuban music. What is called nowadays guaracha, salsa, everything comes from what was known in Cuba as guaracha. son montuno, guaguancó, la columbia, la rumba. All those rhythms are of African origin. It's the clave rhythm. Everybody knows it in every place where Cuban music is played.
One of your most famous compositions is entitled Afro Blue, which has been recorded by 30 different musicians.
Afro Blue, sí, sí, como no.
Afro Blue, yes. John Coltrane, Oscar Brown Jr., and many other musicians have recorded it in all parts of the world.
So what were you thinking about when you wrote this song?
Bueno, estábamos haciendo un programa, me recuerdo, con la señora Diana Chuck. Estábamos haciendo un programa de televisión. Yo estaba con Callera y ella...
We were doing a TV program with Diana Shore. I was with Cal Jader. We were asked to show up at 9 in the morning in a California studio, but the program got delayed and we were told that we wouldn't go on until 3. So we were there doing nothing when I sat at the piano and started making up a melody. Then that night we played it on the Diana Shore show.
How did it go? How many nights I remember dancing to that song, Don Bongo.
Sí, como no, como no.
So, what would you say is now your most important legacy?
Bueno, creo que lo más grande que he hecho en la vida es...
I think the greatest thing in my life has been music. It's part of my heart, of my life, and I will die happy about everything I've done, with all the musicians with whom I've shared part of me, and doing what I wanted to do since I was a child.
Hacer lo que quería hacer desde niño, pero quisiera ir a África antes de morirme.
But I would very much like to go to Africa before I die. Because that's where the musical legacy for Latino America comes from. In the Caribbean, everywhere, the roots are African.
Don Bongo, I want you to know that we all miss having you in the musical scene and that we love you very, very much.
Muchas gracias. Yo igualmente a todos los quiero.
Thank you very much. I love you too. Keep loving music, because music is the love of life, and we all need to love it till we can't anymore.
Y todo vamos a disfrutarla hasta que ya no podemos.
Gracias, Don Bongo. La verdad que ha sido un placer. Un abracito.
Igualmente. Bye.
El gran Mongo Santa María, maestro conguero and a legend in Afro-Cuban music. A two-disc musical anthology entitled Skin on Skin is out on the Rhino Records label. Ramon Mongo Santa María passed away on February 1st, 2003. According to his friend and fellow percussionist Bobby Sanabria, Mongo never did get the opportunity to visit Africa, but his spirit and his music definitely did. Friends always bring along friends, so in 1955, Mongo Santa María helped bring his friend, Carlos Valdés, to the United States. The diminutive Cuban conguero, better known as Patato or Patato Valdés, would become a giant in the New York jazz scene, where he was a fixture for more than 50 years. Patato passed away this past December, but I'll always remember his music and our conversation in October of 2000.
Uncle Patato! Uncle Patato, my uncle! Give me the conga! Give me the conga!
Carlos Valdés, otherwise known as Patato, is a master conguero and well known in the salsa and Latin jazz music circles. He's played with almost every major musician, including Machito, Cachao, Mario Bauzá, Dizzy Gillespie, Tito Puente, and Quincy Jones, just to name a few. Patato has lived in New York City since 1954 and is considered one of the greatest living Cuba conga players. A new collection of his recordings entitled The Legend of Cuban Percussion is out with some of his best recording sessions. And Patato joins us now on Latino USA. Bienvenido, Patato. So tell us how it all began. You started playing congas when and where? Cuéntanos cómo empezó todo. Empezaste tocando conga, ¿dónde y cuándo?
Y empecé en Cuba. Primero, empecé tocando la marímbula.
I started in Cuba.
¿Qué quiere decir?
And I started playing the marímbula from Africa. It was the first bass in the world with four strings. But later, the problem was that the basses in Cuba were German, and they were too big. So when I went out on the street with my bass, people would tell me, "Hey, Patato, who's carrying who?"
Oye, Patato, ¿quién lleva quién?
What is the form that you play the conga that makes it so unique to your style? ¿Cuál es la forma que lo tocas que es tan único?
Que yo tan enamorado de los tambores y como tocaba tres, sé la afinación.
I've been in love with drums all my life. I started with the traditional Cuban conga, but the pitch was so high it bothered me. And I asked the guy who made my congas. His name was Ramon Vergara. Do you think you could put tuners to the congas like the ones on the bongos? And he told me, "Are you crazy?" So I asked him to make me three congas with tuners. So I invented that. I was the first in Cuba to use congas with tuners.
En Cuba, a las congas. Yo fui que inventé esa primera. G, B flat, C. Ba, ba, B. Pom, pi. Cung, cung, ki, cung.
Patato, I know that you are such a master of congas and of percussion that I bet you could probably even make a great percussive rhythm right here on this table where we're sitting. Can you show me? Enséñame.
Óigame.
Muchísimas gracias. Thank you so much. Carlos Patato Valdez is the master Cuban conguero. His latest CD is entitled Patato, The Legend of Cuban Percussion. It's released by Six Degrees Travel Series. Muchísimas gracias, Patato, y mucha salud. Bendición. Yeah. A working musician to the end, Patato was on tour with his group, the Conga Kings, when he became short of breath. Carlos Patato Valdez passed away on December 4th, 2007. He was 81 years old. And if you happen to miss an episode of Latino USA, you can hear our podcasts at latinousa.org or look for us on iTunes. In a minute, El Rey de las Manos Duras, the one and only king of the hard hands, New Yorican conguero Rey Barreto, coming up on Latino USA. No se vayan. We'll be right back. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And now, El Rey de las Manos Duras, the King of the Hard Hands, Ray Barreto. This interview was recorded in July of 2002. We're honored to have you here on Latino USA. Bienvenido, Maestro Ray Barreto.
Thank you, Maria. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So take us back to the 1940s and 50s. How did you know that you could make it as a musician, as a Latin musician?
I didn't know. I had no idea. I went back home and I bought myself a cheap pair of little bongos and stuff and asked questions, and they told me about a club in Mount Vernon called the Bucket of Blood. So I took a bus up to the Bucket of Blood, and there was this little trio playing, and I asked if I could sit in, and they said sure. And I wasn't playing Latin music then. It was all strictly a jazz circuit. And I happened to meet Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and Roy Haynes and Max Roach, and I was rubbing shoulders with some of the giants in the world of jazz. And I started to get a little reputation around, you know, and someone called me for a job in the first Latin band that I ever played with was Jose Curbelo. And then one day, the great Puerto Rican singer Santito Colón was singing with Curbelo, and Santito left Curbelo to join Tito Puente's band. And while in Tito's band, Mongo Santa Maria left the band to go with Cal Jader in the West Coast. And Tito was trying different people out, and Santito Colón said, "Guy that was playing with us in Curbelo's band, why don't you give him a shot?" So I went to the Palladium on a Wednesday night, sat in with Puente on that Wednesday night, and then he said, "Be at RCA tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And we did the first session of Dance Mania, which became one of the standards of the great Latin dance albums ever recorded. And so I spent the next 4 years with Tito.
Now, Ray, you really dislike the term Latin jazz. And you've said that that mixing in a couple of Latin rhythms when you've got standard jazz is essentially what you see as Latin jazz. I mean, those are pretty... You've got a wrath against Latin jazz because...
Well, it's just... Well, my thing is that I disagree with the premise that there's such a thing as Latin jazz. Jazz is an American product. Jazz is part of the American experience. Jazz stems from the period in the South when slaves were picking cotton, and their first songs that went through to New Orleans, and the first people that took those songs and the marches going to funerals and started to interject syncopations that would eventually become jazz. People had started with things that started with Buddy Bolden and then later King Oliver, and then in the eventual master, Louis Armstrong. And then the evolutionary process, which eventually brought it to Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and then John Coltrane, and that's all part of that process, the American process. The Latin rhythms are part of the Afro-Caribbean process. The rhythmic aspect of it were rhythms that were developed either essentially in Cuba, partly in Puerto Rico, partly in Brazil, but the rhythms themselves are part of the Afro-Caribbean experience. Now, in New York, here comes Dizzy Gillespie and says, "I want to take that experience, incorporate it into what we play, which is jazz." For me, that makes it jazz with Latin. Jazz is an American art form. The rhythms that are part when they use with jazz are part of the Caribbean art form, that they come together, which for me does not necessarily make it Latin jazz.
You know, Ray, it's interesting because I've been watching you for 20 years since I first came to New York. You were probably one of the first Latin musicians that I saw. What about the change that you made from being the salsa musician that people knew and danced to becoming the jazz musician that you want to be, and in fact saying you don't want people to dance to your music? I was so taken aback when I heard that. I was like, whoa, most musicians...
Because I don't play dance music. Well, the truth is that salsa reached a point where I saw the end of the line for me. I was on my way to becoming a dinosaur. You know, when you hang around and you're blessed to hang around for 30 years and you can ply your craft for 30 years, but somewhere along the line, there are a whole new bunch of younger people, young heroes, a new generation of young listeners who relate to artists of their age and their contemporaries. You know, you go through that cycle.
Is there one particular song that you kind of think back and say, when you saw yourself playing that, was when you kind of said, okay, it's time to move on?
First of all, the job started to become less and less frequent, and it wasn't a question of a song. It was a question that I was playing the same repertoire. But when you played those songs, you had to play them the same way, with the same arrangement and the same routine every night, and it was very predictable. Of course, to an audience who wanted to hear that, they wouldn't accept it any other way. They wanted to hear the way it's like a comfortable old shoe, you know? You want it to fit nicely and not create any waves. What I do now is something that creates waves. I'll play a tune, and if you come back the following night, I'll play it completely different. You won't know it's the same tune. Because the craft of jazz and the essential element of jazz is improvisation. And improvisation is strictly what you do on the spot at the moment, what inspires you at the moment. And each night, the inspiration and the things that change the way you, that affect the way you play are different. So you don't necessarily play the same way, and the tunes come out different, fresh, and it's a challenge each time, and so I love that feeling.
And we will listen
okay. To
Ray Barreto. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Ray Barreto passed away on February 17th, 2006, but the music of Ray, Mongo, and Patato will live forever. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, UT Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. We had help this week from Stefan Castro del Bosque. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide. On the web at fordfound.org. By Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at lumberliquidators.com. And by Walden University, graduate degrees online for professionals who strive to make a difference. Walden University, a higher degree, a higher purpose. WaldenU.edu. This is NPR, National Public Radio.